Good morning, everyone. This second chant that we did this morning really touched me, the Master's love for me. It's so beautiful, and I'm just amazed, actually, because we're just in the process of putting together a whole program. As you can see, our altar's a little different, because tomorrow evening is the celebration of Yogananda's Mahasamadhi, his a great saint's final exit from his body. And on this path, and many paths, I guess, we actually celebrate that. Not a usual thing for people to do around death, but we do. But I never thought of having that chant tomorrow night, and I'm sorry I didn't. We might have to make a last-minute change for his ever chanting. It is really so beautiful. And that line, how sweet the sound of Om, its master's voice I hear. In all pervading silence, he whispers, I am near. And I have to share, I shared this the other night in our Raja class here. I recently had an experience, and it touched me, and that song just brought it back, and you'll hear why in a minute. And it's so relevant. Well, it would be relevant any week, is the truth, but I was recently in a conversation with somebody who's been coming to the temple for a while, and he was just sharing with me his first, how he came here. And those stories are always so touching. But he said, I just was in the temple for a class, for something. He said, I was not in that moment even looking for a spiritual path. I wasn't thinking about coming onto a path. He said, I had thought about it, but in the past, but not then. And he said, but I looked up at the altar, and he said, they whispered to me. And then he just stopped, and he said it again. They whispered to me. And it was so poignant to me when he said that, because that speaks to where we need to be listening from. Not just that they will come when we are ready. They will come when it's the time. I would like to say we hardly even have to think about it, but of course that's not true. We have to be readying ourselves, but then just in a whisper. And this reading today, well, it's very interesting, this whole grouping of readings, just the way things have worked. For those of you who may be new here today, I am not Asha Praver, who was supposed to be giving service. Rather, my name is Shanti. And I was not supposed to be giving service today, but Asha is up in Laurelwood, one of our communities, with a dear friend of many of ours, whose name is Tushti, who is right now hours, maybe days at the most, but unlikely days, of leaving her body. And the people who are up there with her, Asha being one of them, but there's a group, have been having just such a profound experience. Master has said over and over, the moment that we leave our bodies is the most important moment of life. And I think that is obviously true for the soul that's leaving, but it's also true. And if any of you have been there at that moment with anybody, you know this, never mind. One who is as conscious and as aware as Tushti is, as Asha said in one of her letters to some group, I don't know who of us is receiving those, but she said it's very compelling and profound watching a Kriya Yogi do this. It's different than people who live an unconscious life. But it just became very clear that what was happening was for everybody, and that those souls were all meant to be right there, right then, and that Asha shouldn't leave. So here I am now doing these three services in a row, and all three of them, and next week, which is intuition versus reason. Is that it? Yeah, intuition versus reason. So 3 weeks ago, we had the topic, can man see God? Last week, we had the topic, by thinking, will we understand God? And today, we're talking about dogmatism versus common sense. So 4 readings in a row, Swamiji is trying to help us go to this place where we have to be ready to hear the whisper. When these masters whisper to us, and it's not with our human ears that we hear, but rather with the heart, with that intuitive perception that he mentions in the reading. This is how we know God. This is how we avoid dogmatism. And he's saying to us, use your common sense. He says so beautifully here. He just takes it a little further because it's so kind of Jesus saying, not all of you are going to be able to use your intuitive perception. We're just not all there. Not all of us can perceive reality, even when they're trying to help us. He said, pay attention to the fruits of the teacher. A very simple version of that is I very often say to people who I'm encouraging to come to Sunday service who are new, they've never been here, and I say, you just walk in and look at the faces of the people who always sit in the first few rows. You just look at them. Today we'll call them the fruit of these teachings. And you look and feel their energy. Look at the looks in their face. I'm not casting aspersions to those of you who sit further back. Casting aspersions on you, by no means. But there is a certain group that always sits up front. And by and large, because they're the choir and they're the light bearers and the ministers, but they are people who have been practicing these teachings. And there's something, long before I could understand the teachings, I was so drawn to Ananda. I was drawn to the music. I was drawn to the people more than anything. I didn't know anything about the teachings yet, but I was experiencing the fruit. And I was thinking about this last night because these great masters who come, Jesus, you know, we do these readings every week. It's a reading from the Bible, Jesus' teachings. It's a reading from the Gita, Krishna's teachings. And it's explained to us by Swami Kriyananda. So we have Paramahansa Yogananda's teachings. So we have 3 avatars that we're paying attention to who actually came at very different times. So their jobs varied, and we've talked about that many times. But last night I thought to myself, what a hard job this is that they have. They just make it look so easy to us when they speak the truth. But how hard it is. They are talking about divine realms. They're talking about truths and experiences beyond imagination of expectancy, and they're trying to explain it to us. This is not an easy job that they have. And yet, not with Jesus, not with Krishna, not with Master, do they try and force any of these teachings on us. Never do they resort to theory or argument. Not in that way. Every one of them says, listen to what I'm telling you and practice it. Every one of you, this is all experiential. Now, of course, it was a little different for Jesus because he lived much more right in the midst of what's called Kali Yuga, a darker, harder, more rigid. People were fixed. They were fixed in their understanding of religion. If you didn't fit into that, if you happened to be somebody who wanted to talk about what we now call self-realization, well, you would just be punished according to whatever was acceptable in the day. And some of that punishment was pretty severe, and it didn't matter if you were a priest or actually a self-realized saint. if it didn't go along with the church. They wanted no part of it. They didn't want anybody out there preaching anything that all of their religious leaders couldn't attain or understand. So they would just, you know, if you were lucky, they would just cart you off and hide you off in some small town and not let you say Mass anymore. If you weren't lucky, you were punished in more severe ways. And then Yogananda came, as we all know, at the beginning of Dwapara Yuga, but it's a beginning, and it's about energy, which is more fluid, which is more expansive, which has a kind of flexibility to it. So he has to teach these things to us a little differently, but still, he came and called this path self-realization. He has not tried in any way to force us to believe anything. There are dogmas, there are truths, there are beliefs, which is what the dogmas are, but they don't become law. It only becomes law when it's tested in our own laboratories within, when it's tested in our own courts, which is, how do we feel when we practice these teachings? What happens to us? So that it, none of these teachers that we talk about, that we bring, that we hopefully make real every week, none of them says to us, you have to do this. There's no laws. Master used to say, argue with me. There's a wonderful story about Ramakrishna. I just heard it recently because it must be on Devi's mind. She's using it in a lot of her talks right now. But he had a disciple who desperately wanted to have a vision of Divine Mother. And he begged Ramakrishna for a vision of Divine Mother. And Ramakrishna kept saying, not yet, not yet. But this man begged and begged. And finally Ramakrishna conceded and gave the man a vision of Divine Mother. And then when the man came out of that vision, Ramakrishna said to him, and now what do you have? Because nothing about his consciousness had changed. He had just been given a vision. And what Master comes to us and says is, I'm going to show you how to change your consciousness so that you change from the inside out, so that you can perceive this to be the truth. And they don't say, don't read the scriptures, because they know maybe that's where we are. I love reading the Gita and the Bible, particularly now that I've had them explained to me, if you will. Last night I was looking at Revelations of Christ, and I thought, what an absolutely, of course, I mean, it was no accident that Swami called it Revelations of Christ, but what a beautiful name for that book to explain the Bible. Christ's teachings revealed to us through a master, through Yogananda, and through Swamiji, so that we could take them in and we could make them our own. So it's not about not reading the scripture, but it's not about believing in the teaching of everybody who's read the scripture and believes they understand it. It's about checking in to our own heart, finding ways with our own intuition to see which part of this works for us. How do we feel when we hear these readings? This is what Swamiji says. Always go back to how you feel. Do you feel uplifted? Do you feel positive? Do the people around you look like you're spreading joy? Those things all matter. And this is what our teachers are encouraging us to do. This is what all four of these lessons are about. I wanted to share with us today the story, a story of Dr. Lewis, who was Master's first disciple in the United States. He was a dentist in Boston. I think we all know, even if we don't know that much about his life, he was clearly a highly evolved soul. because Master met him, and the story that I'm about to share with you happened the first night that they were together. But Yogananda was in Boston, and he was going to give a talk at a Unitarian church. And there was a woman who went to the Unitarian church who knew that Dr. Lewis was interested in spirituality. And so he said to him, you should come and hear this master who's speaking tonight, whose name was Yogananda, of course. And Dr. Lewis was actually very skeptical. He said that his parents had warned him so often against charlatans, against people who just wanted to espouse their views, but who had not had a true experience of God yet, that he went there and he was doubting all the way over. But he had a meeting that had been arranged by this woman, whose name I'm forgetting right now, after the service. And he said to Master, there's a reading in the Bible, he said, about us being light. But if that light come to the eye, if thine eye be single, the whole body shall be full of light. And he said to Master, can you explain this? And Master said, I think so. And Dr. Lewis went on and he said, well, I've asked a lot of people and they haven't been able to explain it to me. And Master said, well, why go to the blind leading the blind? He said, they're just both going to fall into the same ditch of error, he called it, or of unknowing. So Dr. Lewis said again, well, can you explain it to me? And Master said, I think so. And so finally Dr. Lewis yelled at him, well, explain it to me then. So Master got a tiger skin rug, it says, where he got it, I don't know. And he said to Dr. Lewis, sit with your legs crossed in front of me. Dr. Lewis is actually very adorable when he tells this story, so if you can ever listen to it, it's on YouTube, do. He said, I was not used to sitting in such a fashion, but I did my best. And Yogananda sat down with him, and over the course of the next bit of time, the first thing he did was touch him, just touch his finger at the point between the eyebrow. And Dr. Lewis said, in that very instant, he said, I felt anything that I had ever experienced as weight in this life was lifted from me. He said, later I would say I felt all of my karma, anything that was holding me back, being lifted. And he said, to this day, it has never returned. And he said, it was an experience that had me feeling ecstatic. And Master let me sit there for a while. He said, and then he moved even closer to me and he put his third eye on my third eye. And he describes then, Dr. Lewis does, having an experience of not quite samadhi yet, but of realizing that he had lost any notion of boundaries in his body, that he was feeling so expansive that he said, I felt so large, it dawned on me, how would I ever come back? But it was such a beautiful feeling that he stayed with it. And then Master touched him, put his third eye to Dr. Lewis's third eye again. And he said, at that point, he saw every detail of a thousand lotus petal. So Master gave him an experience of samadhi. He said, I saw that petal, fill those petals, 1,008 of them, filled with light. He said, I saw the arteries in my neck leading up to my brain. He said, not just as beacons of light, but within that, I could see all of the red corpuscles, he called them, red blood cells, sparkling. He said, and I realized that the divine was in every cell of our being and was every cell of our being and of every being. He said, I realized then, and he stayed that way for a while. And when he came back, he said to Master, I understand. And what did he understand? He had said, I was a dentist. I wanted to know everything in my head. I was a Bostonian. I wanted to learn. I was there yelling at Master, show me. If you know this, show me. So he showed me. He said, and in that moment, I understood that what we know that is true, that is full of light, that matters in this life, all of the love in our heart, everything we're looking to know is not in the intellectual knowledge that we're all gaining, but is in this experience. And Master said to him, do you give me your undivided love? Will you love me as I love you? What a thing to say to somebody. How could you even know what that meant? But Dr. Lewis knew enough to say, I will. Knowing, of course, after you've just had an experience of samadhi. And again, this was obviously a very high being, but he had not been there. He was still looking for answers until Master showed him, these are where the answers lie. It's always so simple, isn't it? You know, last week when I was giving service in Scotts Valley, and Scotts Valley is such a, it's just this little place and it's so warm. It's not like being up here. This is very different. But the place was packed, but it's just so cozy. And I came this close to doing something that dawns on me all the time. We're up here and we're trying to talk about things, so we're engaging the mind just in time to tell you, get out of your mind. It's ridiculous. It's counterproductive. And I was sitting there last week and I thought, these are all my friends. They love me. I love them. I knew everybody in the room. What if I just said, let's meditate. Let's hear this chant again, the Master's love for me, and let's just meditate together. Far better than any words I could say. We didn't have this chant last week, but we had some other perfect chant. Because that is the answer. We are not all ready to have Master put his forehead to ours and have an experience of samadhi. But every one of us is ready to try and get on that path and begin to find the way. And the minute we start that, then they can whisper to us. And whatever it is that drew us here, we then have ears to hear, even when it's just in a whisper. In all-pervading silence, it's Master's voice I hear in that whisper. And that's what they're telling us. They're saying, go deep. That's where it is. And I just want to just find this one thing that Master said. Oh, this is how I wanted to put it. These are his words. He says, because we say this all the time, we talk about what I just said all the time. That's why I said we could say, let's just meditate. Master said, to observe a microbe, what is needed is a microscope. We all know that. He said, to perceive the truth, what is needed is the mind scope of a calm mind and heart, which bring both mind and heart crystal clear perception. You cannot get there as long as your mind is restless. It is just virtually impossible. And all of our minds are a little restless. All of them. This is what happens. I did a seclusion a few weeks ago. And as I said last week, the first 3 days, my house got as clean as it's been in a long time. Probably since my last seclusion. Lots of restlessness. Lots of looking for closets to clean. Until I could get still and quiet and really clean the closet that Master could then walk into and show me the way and speak to me through my heart. This is what we all want. We could just listen to that chant over and over and over. know, this is why Jesus brought the scriptures to everybody, knowing that if all we can do right now is study the scriptures, if all we can do is read those beautiful words, even if we're not ready to go deeper, that by reading the truth over and over and over, reading these readings that we do every week, that we will be elevated to the place where God can then step in and really shower us with his grace.